show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at the middle of the week, hump day, downhill to Friday, and yes, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Head on radionetwork.com to be more precise. Your home of what we like to call conversation radio, as long as we can keep it civil. We'll save the incivility for the people who deserve it. You can get the horn, of course. Via a couple of apps for your smartphone, tablet device, whatever. We recommend the TuneIn app, and we recommend Stitcher Internet Radio, depending on your preference. There are other places to listen to the program as well, dar.fm, streama.com. We are there to be found on Roku devices. Podcast address is at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can also get the podcast at iTunes. Now, to be fair, and I know it may bum some of you out, some of you may be thrilled to hear this. It's about an even mix, I guess. But I'm putting away the fundamentalist snake handling preacher shtick for this week. We'll come back to it next. But in the last 2 days, ain't just a hell of a lot funny going on. And I think a serious discussion of what these last couple of days have meant is more than in order. So we'll give His Holiness the night off, and hopefully have a meaningful consideration conversation about what it means when we consider the nexus of not two, but three areas of Supreme Court ruling. As far as I know, there aren't a lot of people out there who see or saw the Affordable Care Act ruling about this time last summer the way I did. To wit, that the for-profit nature of the Affordable Care Act mandate was upheld because it's, well, good for the insurance industry, not bad for it. They'd never admit it, but it's true. It gives them a whole lot more federal money through the subsidies for the purchase of insurance. But that the real meat of the decision, the portion of the decision in which one understands that the Supreme Court knew exactly what time it was, and particularly Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts, lay in the evisceration of the Medicaid expansion mandate. It was a mandate, too. It compelled all the states to participate in a universal single-payer health care program for an expanded class of deserving American citizens. So I say that just to note that that's going to be part of the mix. The other two are necessarily what happened yesterday and what happened today. And I've had almost 24 hours to think on it, and I have come to the conclusion that the the preliminary idea that we advanced last night that basically took shape during Sergi's call is in fact valid. Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts is, in fact, and it must sting for people like Fat Tony Scalia, Roger Taney Scalia, and Roger Taney Alito. It must sting for those people who consider themselves, and you know, people like Newt Gingrich, you know, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. But the fact of the matter remains that as of yesterday and today, it may be fairly said, and I believe accurately, that Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts is, in fact, the most wily, scheming, intelligent, sharpest Republican in existence in this country today. Because in 2 days' time, he managed the Supreme Court in such a way as to, at one and the same time, provide the Republicans, if the rest of them are smart enough to figure it out, a means by which they can revive themselves or reverse themselves from the path that they were on toward absolute irrelevance, and instead actually start gaining votes among people that they thought they never would. Between yesterday and today, Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts, and I keep saying it that way because I want to build that meme. We don't have a lot of meme building power here, but I really want to. And if you would advance it and help make it stick and let it get out there, he'd have to wear it sooner or later. And we've jokingly said things like "Hi, Van," and "Hi, other people," when little tiny ideas that have burbled up to the surface here have eventually found themselves out in the mainstream. And it's because of y'all. It would be nice to make Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts wear that, own it, what he did yesterday. Because remember, the Chief Justice manages the court. An opinion may or may not have his name as the author of the majority opinion or the dissent, but rest assured, he's pulling a lot of puppet strings. And so what he did yesterday, and then we will deal with the summary effect of the three cases, the one a year ago and the two today. Today and yesterday. What he did yesterday and today is to effectively divide the progressive community. Very effectively, I suspect. Because now, as voting rights advocates go forward, trying to right the wrongs that were wreaked yesterday, I suspect, because we progressives are liberals or whatever we care to call themselves, I still like liberals, are going to be diminished. Because today, the court gave a lot of people a good reason to go home and consider at least a couple of battles won, and further struggles to be engaged in the several states. We have never been very good at understanding, as I pointed out a little bit last night, that an injury to one is an injury to all. It's true, we just haven't exactly taken it to heart. Oh well. It is what happened. On the other hand, I did see mention today in preparing for this evening of what Sergi mentioned in his call yesterday. To wit, that Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor actually did condemn and used his time spent with Representative John Lewis in Selma at the Edmund Pettus Bridge as his sea change moment for understanding the necessity of the Voting Rights Act. Eric Cantor never just does something. He is rather reptilian, and there's always a motive within a motive within a motive. He's an onion, lots of layers. He sees the path that Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts has laid out. He sees an opening via the rewrite or the potential for a rewrite of the Voting Rights Act. He sees the opening it provides for the Republican Party to finally get some traction inside communities of color. And frankly, they care a lot more about the Hispanic community than they do the black community. I don't like saying it, but it is a fact. Eric Cantor sees that. Eric Cantor may act on it. The question remains, how many of the Visigoths in the House of Representatives see it too. Therein lieth the rub. But there are opportunities. Also today, our buddy, our old friend Michael, pointed out, and I actually happened to see it at the same time over on MSNBC, on Andrea Mitchell's portion of the programming, Rachel Maddow appeared, for whom I have respect, who is charming and brilliantly intelligent, and opining about the two rulings today, said, "This is settled. This is done." I think it is anything but settled and anything but done. What we will see. Well, my tweet on the point, on the matter simply suggested that she go ask Representative John Lewis what settled and done means. Because when you've reauthorized a piece of legislation for the next 25 flippin' years via the Congress of the United States and the Supreme Court strikes it down, settled and done takes on a considerably more fluid definition than anything you or I might attach to it. Ain't nothing settled, ain't nothing done where marriage equality is concerned. In the immediate aftermath of the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, there sprang up in this country an entire industry, and I do mean industry, funded on a capitalist model, leveraging tremendous power, people power. And the sole focus of that industry was to undo what Roe did, to undo the acknowledgement that Roe is of a woman's right to have a certain sovereign dignity over the workings of her own body. Let's see, 73. Yeah, that would be 40 years ago. That's a generation. And in the course of that generation, that industry has grown and grown and grown. It is loud, it is hateful, it is intimidating, it is, in fact, homicidal, as the so-called right to life industry has proven over the years with a list of dead victims to its credit. I fully expect, and remember, the anti-abortion industry was born and continues to operate under the shelter, the greatest tax shelter the world has ever seen, operates under the religion industry, which you and I subsidize, even if we don't attend their little houses of flim-flammery and mummery. We subsidize it because we give them a tax break, we give them tax-free status to go and assault the rights of women to control over their own body. They do it tax-free. They do it, in fact, on welfare. Because the tax exemption that exists for religious institutions is nothing but welfare. It is we the people declaring that a certain part of the commons will be diverted to the religion industry. And they use that shelter, that tax dodge, to fund all manner of evil in this country. And one of the evils is the anti-abortion industry. If you haven't noticed, the religion industry is also running the opposition to marriage equality. There is not a single opponent of marriage equality in this country, no, not one, whose argument is predicated on anything but the bigotry inherent in their own so-called faith. Because there isn't a rational argument against marriage equality. There are only irrational religious ones. So guess what? That industry that has been building for a generation and shows no sign of letting up ever, it's going to be joined by another one. And joined, it will morph itself into a sort of double helix replicating chain of hate. Abortion and marriage equality. And they will both be managed from the same low, mucky, serpent-infested headquarters. Religion Inc. I think we would be well advised for everyone to take deep into their own consciousnesses the understanding that, contrary to what Rachel Maddow said, nothing is done. Nothing is settled. way back in the 1890s, one of those creepy old Supreme Courts issued a ruling regarding stock, business, money, capital. And they said, and it's a rather famous line, I just can't remember the case, they said, the capital is always at risk. In that instance, they were talking about whether you were in long-term debentures or the bond market or futures or whatever equities you were in, or just stuffing it under the mattress. The capital is always at risk. You know, even if you think you're safe by stuffing it under the mattress, either inflation will get you, or maybe your house burns down, and, well, there goes the capital. The capital is always at risk. In this country, the roulette wheel is always turning. The same principle applies to these social issues. The rights are always at risk. They are at risk from the outside machinations of people of the religion industry and its captive anti-abortion, anti-woman, anti-rights, anti-marriage, anti-equality, anti-everything positions. But it's also at risk from the inside. And without going into any detail, I will point out that we had an object lesson in that right here on this little old program last night. And therein lies the genius of Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts. At almost a single stroke, he divided the progressive community and united the bigoted, intolerant, hate-filled, regressive, antediluvian, conservative, religion-driven community. Guess who's got the lead out of the gate on this one? That is not, however, to say that there are not glimmers of hope. And in fact, what happened last night in the state capitol in Austin, Texas, is far more than a glimmer. It looked a whole lot more like a dadgum bonfire. You know you've succeeded when you've got right-wing weirdos in Texas calling a 50-year-old mother a terrorist. Because that happened. It really did happen. A terrorist. Bill Zedler is a Republican member of the Texas House of Representatives. And after SB 5 went down, no matter how hard the Republicans tried to cheat, he tweeted, "We had terrorists in the Texas State Senate opposing SB 5. One cannot be certain because of the imprecision of his tweeting whether he means we had a terrorist or whether he means we had terrorists in the Texas State Senate opposing SB 5. Seen some photos, darndest bunch of terrorists I've ever seen. Nobody wearing a mask, nobody got no bombs, nobody got no guns, nobody got no knives. Well, maybe some people had guns. I was informed, I think, by Texas Betsy that it's okay to bring a gun to the Texas State House as long as you have a concealed carry permit and you declare your firearm. Certainly added a little bit of drama to the proceedings, didn't it? Wendy Davis taught liberals and progressives, Democrats, what have you, a little bit about guts last night. and for the and for the so-called progressives who got all damp and doe-eyed over Rand Paul. Well, she served up a master class on what it really means to stand behind your convictions and filibuster something that matters. She also made a pretty compelling argument for the existence of the filibuster itself, because she really did a filibuster. But regardless of how one characterizes her actions, Representative Bill Zedler said she was terrorist, and that the people who supported her, she started out with something like 1,200 Twitter followers at the beginning of the day, and by the close of the day had 40,000. Are the Twitter followers terrorists too? But despite the cheating, they stopped SB5. They killed it. They preserved, if for what turns out to only be a matter of days, the rights to bodily integrity of the women of the state of Texas. Let's see. Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, who is also a right-winger pig-licking, said that the people who sat in the gallery and cheered Wendy Davis on, they were an unruly mob using Occupy Wall Street tactics that disrupted the Senate from protecting unborn babies. I'll be damned. He saw a different crowd, too. But the fact of the matter is, as strange as it may seem, yesterday in Washington, D.C., the system of government failed. Yesterday in Austin, Texas, it prevailed. Now, there's a bit of denouement to the story. The good-haired governor of Texas, Rick Perry, has already called another multi-million-dollar special session of the Texas legislature, presumably in order to protect them unborned. Because, you know, unborn fetuses are far more important than already living women. Which brings me to another point. Last night, I remarked, as I have often remarked, that we must understand that protest movements in this country must become sustained efforts. They must be efforts in which protest stops being... Somewhere along the way, protest morphed into a sort of theater with predefined parameters. We will begin at noon, we will be done by 5, we'll pick up our trash and we'll go. For-profit media in places like Washington, D.C. responded by saying, that's great, we won't cover any of it because it's not really real. That paradigm must change. And we saw in Texas last night how it can change. We saw it more than a year ago in Wisconsin. The first stirrings of a new understanding of what it really means to demonstrate and protest one's grievances to the government. So, in typical Texas fashion, although I have no business describing what typical Texas fashion is, having never even so much as set foot in the state, in typical Texas fashion, Rick Perry called the Democrats and women and their allies bluff. It was no bluff. But he simply said, all right, y'all took the pot on that one, let's shuffle and deal again. Effectively saying, all right, you managed to do that, can you do it twice? You came to the state house and you stayed, and you made it abundantly clear what you were unwilling to tolerate, but can you do it for more than a couple of days? That's the challenge. And we will see, as the days go by and the special session opens, we will see what the answer is. That last little atom of optimism that I yet harbor wants to hope that the challenge will be picked up and that it will... in fact, be carried forward and remain successful. The special session will begin on July 1st. Interesting that a fiscal conservative like Rick Perry thinks nothing of squandering millions of dollars on legislative special sessions over big government desires to rule the insides of women's bodies and still gets away with being called a conservative. It is being said by Tara Culp over at Think Progress, it is unlikely that the same tactics that women's health advocates used... See, no, wrong. Tara, those were not women's health advocates. Those were human rights activists. God, must we pigeonhole ourselves every time? It is unlikely that the same tactics that human rights advocates, activists, used to delay SB 5 during the first special session will be effective during the second. Well, I may still have that atom of optimism, but apparently Terry Culp doesn't. The New York Times reported on Tuesday that under a second special session, the legislation is likely to be approved. Well... Santa Ana did overrun that little band at the Alamo. But it might also be recalled that while he won the battle, well, he came to no good end. I'll never forget when a dear friend of mine who had attended the University of Texas and was then a student friend of mine back at Harvard on the Mon showed me, she had a picture, and it's a very famous picture. It was a reproduction hanging on the wall of her trailer in Morgantown. And it is of the Treaty Oak and Sam Houston and Santa Ana. And there's a table and a document. And the first time I saw it, she said to me, what that picture means is that is Sam Houston telling Santa Ana he can either sign that paper or hang from that tree. Santa Ana won the battle, lost the war. And it may take a while, but I suspect something similar may happen. No, there won't be any hangings. Don't support that. But Texas is changing. And the only thing that can prevent Texas from changing is the right wing in Texas being able to prevent people from being able to vote. Now, I'm not the shell answer man, and I'm not in the go forth and do as I say business either. But here's an idea. As a means to push back against the obvious effect of yesterday and today's rulings in the Supreme Court. How about a simple slogan? Let us marry. Let us vote. It encapsulates the idea that a harm to one is a harm to all, and makes it very easy to go forward on both fronts. Because, and I've got a list here of the hyperbolic, hyperventilated responses of the right wing to today's DOMA ruling. They were so happy yesterday, and then they were brought so low today. I was brought so low yesterday, and many of us were. And while today marks something to celebrate, the question is still open as to what and how much. But what is at risk is the very country itself. And that takes me back to the other of the three Supreme Court decisions that I have sort of lumped together for this filibuster, this digression. It is something that I've referred to in the past as the Plessyization of the United States. And in the last 2 days, it has become much more profound. I make certain assumptions when I talk, and I make them because generally I'm correct. When I say Plessyization, I assume that you know I'm talking about Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court case that gave the official imprimatur of approval to the idea of separate but equal access to services and social life in this country. It created white and colored water fountains. It effectively, Plessy did, created the apartheid state that held forth as the majority rule in this country, and vestiges of which still occasionally rear their ugly heads, such as when high schools in Georgia or Mississippi hold whites-only proms. Well, they can have a Negro prom. They probably listen to that race music. Anyway. So I trust you. You get it when I say Plessy. Well, we are, with these three cases, looking at the almost complete, total Plessyization of the entire United States. Consider. One, if you are a member of the working poor and you live in one state, you may qualify for the Medicaid expansion. If you are working poor, however, and you live in, say, Mississippi Stan, or Alabama Stan, or Kentucky Stan, or, God knows, Texas Stan, you don't get any health insurance, and you live with a persistent, sort of Damocles-esque fear hanging over your head that sometimes you're able to put aside, but that always returns. It comes back with the twinge in the chest that tells you really probably should have your heart checked out. It comes with the tingling in your feet that make you wonder if maybe your diabetes medicine needs to be adjusted. You're taking the diabetes medicine because it's available on the $10 formulary. It comes when driving at night, having forgotten your glasses, you realize that something you could see from a certain distance only a couple of years ago, you now see only as a blur. And like I said, they may go away for a bit, but they come back. And it is dependent entirely upon where you live. New York, Massachusetts, California, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, you know, reasonably sane states, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, Maryland, you will have, if you are poor but working, access to Medicaid in its expanded form. If, on the other hand, you live in one of the stand states, well, you just get to live out that line from Jimmy Buffett's Havana Daydreaming. Daddy chopped that sugar cane till one day he fell dead. Now, why is it? And this is not a rhetorical question. Why is it in a country that has an amendment to its constitution that states explicitly that every citizen of the entire country shall have the protection of the laws, how is it that that can stand side by side with the reality that that self-same citizen, supposedly protected equally by the law, operates under a death sentence in Alabama, but is afforded some sort of health justice in Massachusetts or New York or even West Virginia? Those two concepts cannot exist side by side. Add to it now the fact that, again, if you live in one of those states that was outside the purview of the Voting Rights Act because it did not have a long history of attempting to suppress people's votes based upon the color of their skin or their perceived national origin of their grandparents, well, you're okay. You have, in fact, the equal protection of the laws. But if you're in Alabama, if you're in Texas, if you're in Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arizona, Oklahoma, well, if you get hoodooed out of your ability to cast a vote, or if they redistrict you so as to make sure that your vote effectively does not count, once again, thanks to yesterday, you do not have the equal protection of the laws, and yes, you are part of the United States of Plessy America. Now, today we find out that if you are a federal employee in one of the states that acknowledges the right of people to marry whomsoever they love, male or female, male and female, male and male, female and male, that federal benefits will not be denied. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel got a press release out as quickly as he could saying the United States military will implement the content of this ruling as quickly as is humanly possible. None of that all deliberate speed horse crap that came from the court in Brown versus Board of Education. No. The Defense Department will make this work so that if, with Don't Ask, Don't Tell gone, if a married gay couple in the military, well, they're going to have the same rights as any other married couple. They're going to have the same benefits, the same provisions. And it won't matter, at least on base or to the federal government, if the base is in Texas or New York. The equal protection of the laws will apply. But if you are non-military and non-federally or non-federally employed, tough shit. Imagine for a moment, and I suppose it could happen, Philip has written from time to time and talks about his sojourn from Massachusetts to Texas to Maryland. It could happen that one might be in a marriage that's recognized in Massachusetts or New Jersey or Iowa, Minnesota, and your government job, for some reason or another, transfers you to Alafreakin-Bama. Well, you might maintain your federal benefits, but your marriage does not exist in Alabama-stan any more than a slave marriage existed there prior to 1865. The two people may think they're married, but they ain't. Not in the eyes of the powers that be. So again, the Constitution is in conflict with states' rights. And that is supposed to be a no-brainer contest. Constitution winneth. But it doesn't. But what happens if you're gay and you want to get married in Iowa, perhaps now in California? Well, you do the paperwork. And if you want some sort of hoodoo set over it, that's fine. Or maybe you just go to the county courthouse and let the justice of the peace do it. Or whatever functionary. But if you are in Mississippi, Stan, you will still live in the shadows. You will be an outlier to concepts of family and all the various rights that attend, legally granted rights that attend marital status in this country. You will, in fact, be a citizen of the United States of Plessy, America. And that's reality. And a lot of folks out there who don't really have a direct connection with it or weren't raised in the culture or anything don't necessarily understand the ongoing concerns of some of us about the Civil War and its outcome. I suggest you become concerned. Because as I noted last night, I grew up hearing various and sundry rednecks hollering, "The South will rise again." Guess what? It's happened. What the South could not accomplish 150 years ago by force of arms, they have accomplished in the last year by force of law. It is said that prior to the Civil War, people said the United States are. In other words, they used the third person plural of the verb to be to describe a nation that was comprised of separate polities. The United States are. It is also said that after the Civil War and the upheaval that was wrought and the knitting back together of a shattered republic, people began to say, the United States is. It may be time to re-examine our verb again. Because between access to health care, access to marriage, and access to the ballot box, I don't think we can say the United States is anymore. We're back to the United States are, in which states' rights control the discussion. And it is, whether we recognize it or not, a dangerous time. It is, whether we recognize it or not, a cold civil war. This is it. Welcome to it. You never thought it would look like this, did you? You thought those southern states took their ass whooping and went home and licked their wounds and had their Confederate Memorial Day parades and their Confederate monuments and the states running the old Confederate battle flag up the pole, and well, dang, it's hateful, but that's just the way them people are. And then you woke up and you realized that they had accomplished a de facto secession without ever firing a shot. It's where we are. As sure as God made little green apples and they'll give you a bellyache and the runs if you eat too many, that is where we are. And I suggest that we begin to talk and to plan accordingly. How do you look a worker, a working person in Alabama or Georgia or Mississippi in the eye and say, well, it's just a damn shame you don't live in Illinois. It's just a damn shame you're not in Massachusetts. Just a damn shame you're not in West Virginia. You could have health care. But as it is, you're in Alabama, and I'll bet you wouldn't move to any one of those states for love nor money. So you are, for all intents and purposes, operating under a sentence of death. And all you can do is hope you never get sick. Or as Alan Grayson said, don't get sick, and if you do, die quickly. Because there will be no tender mercies for your family after your passing. The costs will be brutal. And it will have been avoidable Because remember, healthcare-related lack of access to healthcare-related deaths in this country are still measured in the tens of thousands every year. Hell, they're probably measured in the tens of thousands in Texas alone. The United States of Plessy America. If you've got a better way of describing it, I'm open to it. But that's about as concisely as I can put it. This nation isn't going to be broken apart. Wake up. It already has been. And just as using a telescope to peer into deep space, the stars appear to be stationary relative to one another, they are moving further apart all the time. Until eventually, billions of years from now, you won't be able to see another star. Well, you won't be here, but trust me, in the night sky. And eventually, in a much shorter span of time, this nation, this thing that we refer to as a republic, may exist in name only, with entirely different sets of rights for people who, by nothing more than the accident of location of birth, are either crowned or crucified, as Jim says. Are either doomed from the instant they emerge from their mother's womb, or have a half a shot at nothing more than life. Lovely, lovely, scrabulous, scrappy, contentious, confusing life. Email has been rolling in, going back to the goober who referred to Wendy Davis and the folks who supported her as terrorists. Jeremy writes in, Bob, to the freak who is calling this wonder lady, Wendy Davis, a terrorist and saying that there are terrorists in the Texas Senate, I say, yes, sir, there are a lot in the Texas Senate, and you're one of them. Amen. Amen. Till, writing in from Austin, under the subject line, Supreme Court. Bob, maybe it's time for a two-thirds supermajority requirement. Supreme Court can make any rule. It can decide its cases any way it wishes. That's why FDR came up with the idea of adding a few more justices. That was shot down. Yeah, but wouldn't it be funny if the Supreme Court had to operate? What if in the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg could shut down every decision just by refusing to participate? You ever think about it that way? Steve, writing in, at the Stonewall, a beginning of a broad-based movement. There was a rally at the Stonewall here in New York to celebrate the DOMA decision. The speakers brought up the VRA decimation and the crowd booed rather loudly. So I think some of us gay folks are aware that this week indeed was a mixed blessing and that we need to work to reverse that sick decision. It's the only chance. It's the only way to stop what was a rather genius bit of nefarious skullduggery on the part of Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts. And this time through, with the DOMA and Prop 8 decisions, well, he wasn't about to go through what he went through with the Affordable Care Act decision. He quietly let Kennedy join the four so-called liberals on the court to create that majority so that the four hyper-right-wing justices could fulminate and help give birth to that new industry that the right wing will be running at us for the next generation. And this from Kate. I may be subject line, come on folks. I may be working on false assumptions here, but Bob, but I suspect that Bob isn't sharing how close to the edge we are getting. Contributions haven't been forthcoming this month. He's spoken about the hole we're in. I have entreated him for years to be more forthcoming, but he is better at analyzing the news. It sounds to me like that time the mic went cold, the studio went dark. I'm betting that's about to happen again because, as I've said before for years, Bob is piss poor at talking about those edges. I don't like to talk about them, Kate. I don't like to look over them. The abyss stares back. If memory serves me right, the power and internet comes to about $800 a month. More than that, actually. We're not meeting that challenge. It doesn't matter if the donation's 5 or 10 or more. Every little bit adds up. Come on, folks. Who out there doesn't have $5? My $100 tonight is about all I have for this month. I'm willing to make book on who the last caller will be on the horn. That might happen tonight. Thank you, Kate. Truth of the matter is, as of last night and coming into tonight, the fundraising goal is $375. $375. 37 at 10, 10 at 37, you know. But yeah, we dance always on the edge. So, there it is. Well, that's enough filibobster for now. Of course, we've got all the frills and all the merry madness that supports stuff like this, and we got 2 hours to go into that. 2 hours also for your conversations. You know the number 304-658-3333 on the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Either one works just fine. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Follow up on Twitter, @BobKincaid. By the way, another little mention. The ACACT team has a Twitter account you might wish to follow. It is ACACT, @ACACTNOW. @ACACTNOW. Sure could use some followers on that. Don't do a lot of tweeting on it, but need the followers. And, you know, we've been so wrapped up with the Supreme Court decisions, hardly noticed there was a little speech yesterday about climate change. Yes, I know. The first thing is to say, well, he gives great speeches. But it appears there will be something happening with some of what President Obama laid out yesterday in terms of what he can do by executive order. But more fascinating than that was the short shrift it was given. Barack Obama, in a seminal speech about climate change, lost out to Paula Deen and George Zimmerman. I'm not kidding. Topsy-turvy? Yeah, a little bit. So, thanks to Sal for getting us started this evening. We're at 3:65. Appreciate it, Sal. We all do. Thank you very much. We'll take a break. Your calls are welcome. We'll be right back. This is Conversation Radio, listener supported. This is The Horn. Wrong song.
Anything I've done to be Yvonne Helm, there's Paul Rogers, and there's Slater Loveridge.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, hour number two. Thanks be Rez. Tonight's forestalled prayer meeting Wednesday, because, well, it all is kind of prayer meeting tied up, because most of this misery that we're going to be compelled to deal with in the coming years is, of course, generated by the loving followers of Jesus Christ. Oh, well, right. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who didn't, that was the live version of one of my favorite Drive-By Truckers songs from A Blessing and a Curse. That's the disc in question. It's the live version of Marry Me. It seemed appropriate for the moment. Let's see. A note coming in from Beth in Texas. The hits just keep on coming. Governor Rick Perry down there tweeted, "Unfinished business for hashtag TexLedge. Let's protect women and the unborn. Fund roads. Fix juvenile sentencing. See y'all back at work July 1. Beth noting, "Of course, there is that woman we execute tonight in Texas." Rick will probably have an extra giggle for that. Maybe he can check out, do it W style.
I know. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. Kill her.
Thank you, Jack, for helping out. We are now at 340. On the way to meeting tonight's goal. Thank you very kindly. Let's go to the Skype line. Jeff is with us. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Guy. How are you?
Hanging in.
You know, I never thought I'd meet anybody who was more anti-religion than I am.
Congratulations.
But the only difference between you and I is I do have friends of mine who are very religious.
Oh, I do too.
And I do have to respect their beliefs, man. I got to do it, but that's all right.
Well, no, I have friends who are very religious too. I just, we just have an understanding that we're not going to talk about it.
Well, the thing is, I think that's okay. Yeah.
Oh, because when we do, I tell them that I'm not going to give them a pass because they don't give me one.
Well,
they want me to be saved, I want them to be rational.
This has been going on now for before the, like about the Druids' time. Since Christianity has gotten a lot worse, before that was Judaism, which was 4,000 years before that. I mean, this is going on forever now. I'm going to tell you something. The nice part about this is I can normally opt out of that religious portions. I do realize I'm pressured to make sure my kids were brought up the right way and make sure we have it. I want to go off a little bit, just a little bit off the topic here. My kids, when they were growing up, and they're 40 some odd years old now. When I first, they were growing up, they were asked in school, we live in a small town, and they go to school and they asked how many hours of television they watched. And my daughter said to them, a half an hour. She said, oh, a half an hour a day. She said, no, a half an hour all summer is all we watched. We don't have a TV set. Now, I purposely didn't have a TV set in the house, and we used to keep horses, and my kid had a golf cart, and the kids helped me around the farm, and they helped me build stuff, and we played cards and chess and games. Well, all of a sudden, they sent a social worker up to my house.
What?
That's what they did. This is New York State, man. This is not Back Hills. This is not, you know, Moorhaven, Florida, or this is not Back Hills. This is it's a farm community in New York State. It's up in the mountains, but it looks a little bit like West Virginia, not quite as pretty, but almost. It's a beautiful area. Now, I've got this social worker coming up to find out why I didn't have a TV set in my house. Once they got here, once it was two of them, a man and a female, they realized they made a mistake and they walked out. But I was shocked that they would do that. Now, I got to tell you another little story. When you mentioned the South and prejudice, when Obama first ran for election, I live in a Democratic town. Democrats run and the town, and the town depends upon Democrats staying in office. I think there's two Republicans in this whole town. Now you got the picture, right? Right?
Yes.
I put up. Someone brought me over. Now I live on a little. It's a county road, and I live in a dirt. My driveway is a mile dirt road, and we put in a sign. Someone gave me a sign that says Obama for president. I forget exactly how it was worded. And there's no point in putting it up. There's only, 25 cars a day past this place. But I figured I'd hang that sucker right up, put the sign in those stick-in signs, with the plastic thing in there. And I took my wife down and got to shopping, and the sign was gone. So I thought the guy who gave me the sign had pulled the sign and put it in a more visual, more traffic place. Call him up and say, you took the sign. I said, no, I didn't take no sign. So I was pretty surprised. Now, when I go to the dump, they're bad-mouthing black guy, Obama. This is New York State. This is not down deep south. This is 30 miles from the Capitol. And the people in the town, in the dump, and I'm friendly with them, and they're bad-mouthing Obama. Well, this is when he first got elected, the beginning of this, 8 years ago. Well, 5 years ago. Anyway, so Susan and I decide we're going to go ahead and we got a piece of plywood, and we have the kids, all the little kids around town, paint up a sign. At that point in time, Sarah Palin was running as the VP, as a VP with what's his name?
I remember well.
Yeah. So we put up a sign, don't be fooled again, vote Obama, and it was on a 4x8 sheet of plywood. On both sides painted up, real nice by kids, but it was a cute sign. I screwed that sucker right to the telephone pole that's in the middle of the lawn with sheetrock screws, and I put up 2x4s, and I put up, that sucker was solid in the ground. Now, 3 or 4 days go by, and everything's cool, and then one day, Susan and I go down the hill, and that sign is taken out, every screw taken out, neat as a pin, gone. Now, not only that, there's a dead raccoon in front of my mailbox.
That took work.
You bet your bippy it took work. Now, here I am in the middle of nowhere. This sign shouldn't have mattered. But I said, this is a great thing. So I call the state police up, and I call them, and someone else, a friend of mine, calls the media. And the media knows me from all over. I'm always on them. We got front page, well, not front page, but third page news about how prejudiced this area is and about the coon in the mailbox and the sign being, we made more hay out of that sign than you can shake a stick at. But I just wanted to give you a, for instance, that it's not just the prejudices around down south, it's prejudices all over the place. And this happened in upstate New York, 25 miles from the capital of Albany. So this is a very interesting thing. Now, that's all the negative stuff. Then we had another deal happening on the other day, and we had a discussion group, and I record my discussion groups. I actually do a program that we record it like a podcast. And we had someone, I've been working for renewable energy for many, many years. And this fellow was talking, we were talking about fracking because we had an anti-fracking group in Albany. There's about 5,000 people at the Capitol. And I've mentioned the fact that mountaintop removal and fracking are pretty close to the same damn thing. They're going to poison people's wells and kill people for no reason. And it's all about money. I went on and about it. Anyway, this guy says to me, I've been doing renewable energy as far as much as you have, Jeff. And he says to me, look how we're finally getting somewhere. I said, John, how many more 40 years do we have to work to get something to happen? How many more lifetimes do we want to work to get something as simple as renewable energy? How many more lifetimes do we have to work to get equality for someone to get married if they love somebody? How many more lifetimes, how much more do we have to keep on arguing and fighting until we get this thing working? And if it gets any worse, where we lose any more rights, then what are we going to do? If I sound frustrated, it's because I am. I'm so sick and tired of hearing everybody badmouth one another. Let's get together and figure out a way that we can come together and move this whole humanitarian thinking process.
Jeff,
we're talking about.
You're not going to get any pushback from me on any of that. The fact of the matter is, I can sing Kumbaya as sweetly as the next person. And I like it.
Just like
okay?
My conservative friend. Just like him. Just said the same thing to me.
I like it. Since we're just sort of swapping stories here, it's like when the coal people here in this state started referring to people like me as tree huggers. I'll confess, at that point in time, I shinnied up a few in my youth, but I had never actually stood still and just put my arms around a tree. And so I figured if they were going to make me be one, I needed to get with the program. And I went, and I found me a good-sized tree. Not some little sapling that I might damage by, you know, just hugging it too hard. I found me a good-sized oak. Maybe it was a maple. I favor hardwoods. And I put my arms around it, and I just stood there for a little bit. Laid my head over on the trunk. And I just breathed in and breathed out and let the world go about its business around me and tried to put aside any senses of self-consciousness. And you know what? Turned out to be probably one of the more pleasant experiences I had in quite some time. Turned out that tree hugging was actually a good thing. But of course, the other side uses it as a pejorative to indicate that somehow we are disconnected from reality or from other people's needs to be able to poison us so they can afford new bulbs for the tanning bed next year, or poison us so that they can get a new truck every 3 years instead of every five. And what does it take to bring us together? Well, a long time ago, and we haven't heard from you in a while, I know why. He's rather busy with his life, and I hope happily so. A long time ago, a friend of ours named Reverbo the human boy, called in to say that we have been sitting here, metaphorically speaking, idling the bus, waiting for some people to get on and come with us who weren't ever going to. And that at some point in time, we would need to simply, if we intended to ever reach our destination, close the doors, put it in gear, and go. And I think that's kind of where we are. And I hate the admission of that, Jeff, because it means that we are in a state of permanent plessiaization.
Well,
of this country.
Hold on one second. I see where you're coming from, but I disagree with that. I am a liberal bearded hippie tree hugger, and I appreciate where you're coming from. I deal with a few other radio program people, and one of them is very conservative. But he says exactly this. But he, by the way, he's right on with me with humanitarian stuff. He's right on with me with renewable energy for different reasons, but he's right on with me with that. He's right. He's on because of economics. I explained that. He's a smart guy. And he said the same thing to me yesterday as you just said, that Gumbaya thing. You know, Jeff, you gotta get off that Gumbaya thing, but I appreciate that.
No, I'm not saying you gotta get off of it. I'm saying it's fine.
No, but he's saying I'll get on with you for different reasons. What I'm trying to say is that, and then I have my attorney who's a conservative preacher, engineer, known this guy for 25 years. I have other friends of mine. Of course, I have a lot of the Democrat friends who don't even think at all like a progressive liberal. They think more like they call themselves Democrats. They'll vote Democrat if it feels they're going to make some money out of it. But the system is so damn screwed up, I can't even figure out who's wearing the white hats.
That's tough. It can be tough. And another part of the difficulty is when you get sucked into the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That makes for some real, that makes for real messy ethics.
Well, the point is, that's what I'm really tired of trying to figure out who's my friend, who's my enemy. I'm saying, here's the direction I want to go. This is where, here's the goal. Here's the X marks the spot.
Well, the other thing, Jeff, is that I think we are inclined as progressive liberal people to resist ideas of black and white, and I'm not talking about race at this point.
I know what you're talking about. They don't like grays. Most people don't like grays.
No, right? No. That's the thing. We liberals and progressives are pretty good at gray, and we don't like black and white because we suspect that the world is not actually arranged that way.
Well,
but the fact of the matter is, you talk about I don't know who my friends are and who my enemies are. Well, you can lay out some pretty good, a pretty good idea on enemies if you really think about it. And I go to enemies because the circumstances are more stark there, at least by my lights. TransCanada, that wants to drive this what Charlie Pierce calls our great big Keystone XL death funnel through the middle of our country. They're an enemy. Okay, because they're going to make it harder for human beings to go on, you know, being
well,
human
that,
beings.
That's an obvious.
Americans for Prosperity.
That's obvious.
ExxonMobil.
Yeah, those
Habit.
Are obvious. Those are the obvious. I mean, that's. Stark.
Well, you know what? Sometimes when you're trying to, we use folksy little analogies down here. When you're sorting through a bag of dry beans, the first thing you do is pick out the visible rocks, because they're obviously rocks and they're not going to be good to eat.
No,
and you start there, and then you soak them and rinse them and hope that you've gotten away the sand and the dirt and the other stuff that you couldn't necessarily see on the first pass. But in an effort like this, you do have to start with the obvious, because if you overlook the obvious to go and find the not so obvious, what you wind up looking for is a hay straw in a needle stack.
I'm not arguing that point. My point is the individual human being. When I talk to a fellow who considers himself a conservative Republican, can't stand Obama, but I talk to a theoretically a liberal Democrat, can stand Obama. And then you listen to the both sides. So what do you want as a conservative Republican? where do you want to go? And they, by the way, don't want the pipeline coming through our country. These are the conservatives. They want to see, the conservatives that I know, want to see renewable energy happen.
For well, I mean no insult by this, Jeff. Then you're dealing with a different crowd of conservatives.
Well, no, I'm dealing with...
Because I have yet to meet or hear an anti-Keystone XL pipeline right-winger.
Well, I we're not talking about the pipeline. Everyone I know, including all my conservative friends, do not want to see this pipeline happen. They do not want to see fracking in New York. They agree that we shouldn't be blowing mountaintops off to get coal out of. These are conservative people, not liberal progressives that I'm talking about. My attorney... He looks at grays. He has a belief system about Jesus Christ, and he has a belief system about other things that I don't agree with him on, but he definitely wants to see his grandchildren live in a world that has renewable energy.
Well, tell me, does he also acknowledge the fact that the planet is changing and not in a good way?
Actually, he acknowledges that. He's an engineer. He's not a stupid guy. He's a smart guy, but he's definitely opposite of what I am. He's not the only one. I'm just using him as an example.
Sure, I understand.
There is many people like that, and when I introduce him to we do a lot of Skype work, and I introduce him to people from all over the country. I say, oh, this is one of my conservative friends, and someone's on the couch, and this guy's a liberal friend over here, and we're going to have a discussion tonight. So we do, we actually have a real discussion. We normally record them. We normally listen to them later, pick out the best ones of the week, and we give one, and we use them. But what I'm trying to suggest is that everything you say I agree upon, and I have to answer how much longer are we going to keep on fighting without coming to some kind of conclusions that will help humanity. I cannot keep on bad-mouthing China or keep on bad-mouthing India. I had one person over here last night. She said, last year was China. Oh, we owe the world. China is going to take us over. Last night she's into India is going to take us over. This is a person, by the way, from Cuba, by the way, who came over here about 20 years ago, and she's doesn't want any more immigrants coming over, which is amazing. You see where I'm going with this. You can explain it better than I can. You're great about this stuff. So you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do. But again, I return to my thesis, Jeff. You're dealing with a different brand. Because what I see in my inbox every day and what I see just by looking at the culture around me, I am by far the most liberal person probably in a 50-mile radius of where I sit. Okay, if not 100. But that doesn't mean that I can't coexist with my neighbors. We clearly do. And sometimes it takes the form of, you know, we rib each other, or sometimes it takes the form of we just agree not to talk about certain things. And sometimes, sometimes you find out that you can talk about things with people that you never dreamed you'd be able to. I had a mountaintop removal conversation with a fellow the other day who I didn't expect to be able to say that to. But it turned out that we had a magnificent conversation.
You just hit my point.
But that is, I'm afraid, Jeff, the exception and not the rule.
But you found in that human being an actual common denominator that you're able to get some.
But the problem is, and it is a problem, when he and I go to the voting booth.
Yeah.
I will give you a 100% likelihood that he and I will cancel each other's votes out.
I guarantee you that. But the problem is, huh? Now this is I got it. Now I'm gonna put a plug in for Dr. Bill here. I never realized how the Constitution was written. So if you go to that voting booth this system we have working works great. I don't want to bring up this. I don't want to bring up my topic again. I just won't do it. But I'm telling you, the way the system is working the way it's supposed to work. There's other problems here at stake, and that's the part we have to talk to get the common ground on, so we can fix the problem. Then whatever we do, I know that 40 years ago when you went, the political system worked quite well. Before Ronald Reagan, this political system was not as charged as it was now. The Congress worked together. The Senate worked together. Back in the 70s and 80s, I lobbied the hell out of Congress and the Senate. And I had no problem with the hatred that I see today. And I mean, I actually see hatred in that Congress and Senate. I don't know if
I think we could probably do 3 hours all by its lonesome on what the causes of what you just described are. But I think we can also do the Cliff Notes version. And it has to do with, it's the decision that was made the night after, or the day after, hours after, Barry Goldwater got his rear end handed to him in 1964, and you probably know that better than I do.
That's right.
But it's followed up by a determined effort by the right in this country to commit generational work. Remember, the John Birchers and the right wing were out there going hammer and tongs at the same time that people were having dogs set on them and fire hoses in Birmingham. And they were going in the exact opposite direction.
I am well aware. Go ahead.
So what we see in the present era is a nexus of the pernicious effect of what I call evangelical religion industry, because Jerry Falwell led them out of the wilderness and into politics. He led them out of the wilderness and into the swamp. And the media. I have a story here, and I think it's emblematic of part of the problem, Jeff.
Well, I'm listening.
I have a story here about Barack Obama's speech yesterday about climate change. Now, what happened in that speech is that it was utterly ignored by the TV news outlets. I mentioned it briefly a few minutes ago. Barack Obama, on the single most laser beam focused statements he's ever made about climate change, was ignored. You know who, and this is something that we can ruminate on. You know who ignored him the most? More than Fox, more than CNN? MSNBC. You know who gave him the most coverage?
Fox.
The Weather Channel.
Although they did it with a witch. I didn't know that.
So there's and he lost out to Paula Deen and the Voting Rights Act, and he lost out to George Zimmerman and the Trayvon Martin trial. He lost out to all those things. I was actually watching when Andrea Mitchell, Mrs. Greenspan, right, said, "Okay, we're going to cut away to the president now for his speech." And I thought, okay, and sat down to watch, and bang, 20 seconds, and they cut to commercial, and it was gone. And my eyeballs were spinning. I mean, really?
Go ahead.
And you got to wonder who felt threatened by carrying that speech.
You know, that's not the problem here, and I really didn't. I don't want to really do this. Okay. The problem here is not, the problem here is all about the way the economic, never mind. You know where I'm going with it. I'm not going to bring it up again. I refuse. I'm going to let you guys take, I'm telling you, you know what I'm talking about. I don't need to do this. There's a reason why these things aren't being addressed. There's a reason why our environmental system is collapsing. There's a reason why our political system is collapsing. There's a reason why our educational system is collapsing. We need to look at this. We need to find out the root causes and try to come up with a solution to repair it. I think we have an opportunity. Otherwise, I wouldn't waste my time. I'd be watching Star Trek. Did you see where I'm going with this? I believe we can do something, but it cannot be done by saying, look at all the problems. We know that renewable energy is a much better thing because it doesn't require payback once you put the system in place. We know we should be using fossil fuel as the condiment, not the main course. We know these things. We know about the economics of renewable energy.
And we know it, Jeff, and they know it too.
Right.
And knowing it, they have vast amounts of money to commit to not seeing it done. Just as a for instance, I forget exactly which Republican member of the House of Representatives it was that I saw interviewed yesterday, they spent more time with this guy than they did on the president's speech, okay? But they called him in to get him to talk about it. And he said, and I'm not kidding, made me want to holler, hey, boy, bring me the Elvis gun and a peanut butter and banana sandwich. I'm a shooting the TV again.
You just sound like Black, like Lewis Black for a second. Go ahead.
He was asked a question about the Keystone XL pipeline. And his response to it, and this is pretty close, his response to it was to say, well, we need to build this Keystone XL pipeline because if the pipeline doesn't come through America, that just means they'll build the pipeline somewhere else and then China will get the oil.
Go ahead.
Well, the fact of the matter is the Chinese are going to get the oil if it goes to Houston too. That's the whole purpose, is to put that tar sands oil on the global market.
Right. No one's asking the question, by the way, on what the tar sands oil or the fracking oil, or the fracking gases are going to cost to the individual person. That's number one. Number two, it doesn't really matter what it costs because the cost is totally irrelevant.
Actually, some of that's been analyzed. Gasoline prices will actually go up in the states where the Keystone XL pipeline passes through.
No, I know that. I didn't want to go into the details.
But, that's... But the fact of the matter is, what the man said was such an obvious... I mean, it wasn't like he had a misunderstanding. He was lying.
Well, okay? But that's the norm. That's accepted for today. That's the norm. The system is totally collapsing. You cannot... The language doesn't mean anything. Like when you say it's absolutely perfect. Or you say that the word, we can say this is horrendous. The words don't mean anything any longer. There's not enough words. The semantics are so bad that no one understands what they mean. I'm a little frustrated with this, but I can actually see in my mind. Well, maybe I'm crazy as a loon. But in my mind, I can actually see a way of repairing this system or helping to repair these systems. It's in my mind. Now, I can't believe that if we continue on the course we're on, that we're going to be able to repair or fix. It gets worse and worse. It doesn't get better and better. The chances of our grandchildren, our great grandchildren, having a quality of life as you, by the way, you as a person of a certain age that has lived very well, and me as a person a little older than you have worked very well, and my parents. But that's it, baby. The people who, in most cases, even the educated people listening to these programs now, have. They've got loans up the yin yang. They're part of this system. It's what's going on in this whole world, it's not just U.S., it's worldwide, is a horrendous problem.
And it is all, and see, I tender no blame to my parents, for instance.
Neither do I.
But they were, and you know, the thing we've always said in the U.S. is our goal is to make sure that our kids have it better than we did. I think you're absolutely correct, Jeff. I think we have, I don't know, hit peak improvement, and we can't say our kids will have it better.
Oh no, not at all.
And that pushes me damn near weeping. But what I meant when I said I don't fault my parents were sold a bill of goods. So was everybody else's parents or grandparents, since I had
older. That's right.
Because they were sold a bill of goods on a system that is predicated on being able to perpetually consume more. The trick then becomes one of teaching people to consume less. I know, for instance, and he has been on this program, and he's a very dear friend of mine, a magician whose mission in life is to, through the use of prestidigitation, teach children the importance of recycling and to teach children the importance of conservation and of not being wasteful. And he knows, because he's seen it happen, that they go home and they tell their parents. And they know that they are dealing with truth because the magician didn't have any reason to lie to them. And so they begin, and you know, he's been doing this for a generation now. I mean, he was doing magic tricks when we were in high school together. You can look him up on YouTube. He's Steve Trash, Rockin' Eco Hero, and he is a brilliant, brilliant both performer and thinker. He's working the children. And while we have agreed, Jeff, that we don't think our children are going to have it better than we had, it is possible. Whether it's likely is another issue. But it is possible that they will have it as well. And there's even an outside chance that they'll have it better if things like you're talking about, renewable energy, come along. But there is a world of disinformation against which we must push back. You know, the way they put it here in the coal industry is, you damn tree huggers just want us to freeze to death in the dark. Really? Dark? It's going to be dark forever? What, are we going into a cave? Are we going to live in a mine? You know, the sun shines. The wind blows. There is vast, untapped energy in the form of geothermal. It can be done.
We're building a geothermal apartment complex right now.
Beautiful.
Geothermal and solar right now in New York State. And we're doing this right.
You bring me to this little wish list, Jeff. And one of them, when I'm thinking about it, is, for instance, and I am not deprecating in any way. I think it's beautiful what you're doing. And it's great that they're building, entire renewable communities out in maybe places like Colorado.
This is cheap. This is meant for the person.
We need someone to come in and redo an entire town in the coal fields of West Virginia.
Gotcha. I agree.
I mean, everything. Get it completely off the freaking grid. Wind, solar.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a guy out there. He's 95 years old. His name is Jacques Frisco. He's worked on a project called the Phoenix Project. And is it the Phoenix Project? The Venus Project. And he talks about a resource-based economy. The guy's been doing this for, I mean, he's 95. I've seen him on 40 years ago on talking about this thing. I met the guy finally two years ago, and I went to see his seminar. He writes books. He's got a small group of people who work with him. He's world-renowned. The Venus Project is a great idea, and he talks about taking whole cities, and it's resource-based. I don't know how we're going to get there, but he and I had some nice conversations, but it's worth looking up. It's called the Venus Project, and I think it's on, as a matter of fact, I know it's on, Zeitgeist Moving Forward. He was sponsored on that. So it would be an interesting thing to relay to your people who are listening, the Zeitgeist Moving Forward. It's on YouTube. It's a documentary, quasi documentary, about two and a half hours long. It's really a worthwhile thing, and this guy's featured on that. But I believe we can change. We can make. We can put this change into effect. I don't believe we can do it as O'Brien said. You need to know which ladder to put on which wall. I believe you have to keep on putting out the fires while you see where you got to find out where the flamethrower is coming from, and that's the mistake we're all most of us are making, because it's so frustrating to see all these things break down. Like no media on Obama. He's got the bully pulpit of the world, supposed to be, but the money people took over the press. That's why you and I are on this program now. If one of any of these tragedies that's happened in the past 6 months or 6 years happened at any time 40 years ago, this would have been national news, the stuff we're talking about. If there was a pollution problem with fracking or mountaintop removal, and the media would have picked it up. Unfortunately, by the way, the media on in West Virginia was bought and paid for 40 years ago.
Long time ago.
Right, right. Unfortunately, I'm saying. So you guys are still fighting a struggle that should have been over within 6 months.
Well, but it should never have started.
Yeah, or the minute they saw the damage, I mean, tears come to my eyes when I see that part of the world. I'm sorry, I don't want to get emotional on this crap, but we need to find... Or at least get people together to look, and they must not fight with one another, and they must say, what is our problem and where do we want to go? Face a point where we, you know, a thing on a map, and that's our goal, and see, get the best, I don't mean educated minds, I mean good minds, to make sure that we go to a point where we see this will work, and this is going to benefit not only our kids, my personal kids, but it's going to benefit humanity. And when we start to benefit humanity, we help ourselves forever, not just for a short period of time. And what's happening in this society right now is, and I got to blame my parents. My father was, he just wanted to play golf. He had enough money. All he wanted to do was, he doesn't give a damn. He said, the next generation will fix it. Don't worry about it. And
we've run out of generations to fix.
Right, and so we now need to say we need to get some people together and fix this damn thing, and I think we have to change our focus, because our focus has not been helping us. 40 years to get something changed, it's not working. It's like insanity. We're doing the same thing over and over again. We're not getting anywhere. We need to focus on the root causes. And you know where I'm going with that, so I don't want to go any further, and I don't want to tie up your whole show, but I appreciate the time.
Well, it's a pleasure, Jeff. And you know, the fact of the matter is, we're looking here at a Gordian knot. and to extend that Alexander metaphor, you know, everybody before Alexander who came to the Gordian knot tried to find the end of it so that they could start untying it.
I never heard it used like that, but that's great.
Alexander pulled his sword out and hacked the damn thing to pieces. For the last 2,300 years, that has been an object lesson about sometimes you approach problems by completely redoing it. And I take this back to Reverbo's bus analogy. What you're doing with the geothermal apartment complex, good, do it. And lots more people need to do it too.
But that's
it has to happen little by little.
No, I'm sorry. I built the first solar house in New York State 40 years ago. It wasn't passive solar. It was an active solar collectors. And I had maybe 1,000 people come up. We got written up in the papers about it. So what? So what?
Right, because there's no support for it. I mean, I'm sure you're already familiar with the feed-in tariff law in Germany. We need that here.
Yeah.
We badly need that. And you know what? If we can get it, if we, you know what? If a, if a, if a municipality passes it, if a county passes it, if a state passes it, it'll be more likely to be passed down the road. There are people out there who are working on that every day. There are, on the other hand, those of us who are working on simply surviving to the next generation.
I agree.
And
by the way, on that Germany thing, Hermann Schmidt or Hermann Scheer, I met him several times in Washington. Hermann Scheer?
Yes.
I met him in Washington.
It was a fluke,
by mistake. I didn't meet him by mistake. I met him and I said, "How did you ever get this passed?" And we were having a little bite to eat together during a conference. And he said it was a mistake. I said, "What do you mean it was a mistake?" He said, "Well, the conservatives compared to our conservatives in comparison." He said they tried to win the vote over for where they had a small hydro dam. So they were trying to win their vote over for that group. And when they put this thing out, it became overwhelming for renewable energy. And all of a sudden, they got these laws passed that they never expected to. And once that happened, by the way, I don't think you'll see the fossil industry learn by mistakes. They had these great think tanks. And I don't think we'll ever see that. The base problem of this whole thing, Bob, is the economic system. I don't want to go into it, but we've got to see the problem.
I think you and I diverge a little bit on that. I think the problem is political. I think it's economic, and I think it's social. And when I say social, that takes in media as well. Problems that have single solutions are problems that are generally easy to solve. Problems, on the other hand, that are multifaceted, are much more difficult, and that is where we are.
You're almost into the top of that hour, but I just want to if you look at the problem with the political system, it is economics that pay that put money into political systems, and it protects the minority. The minority is the very wealthy people who learn how to manipulate the political system. That's the problem. It's the system was set up so the minority has the right to have a voice. And the big economic system is what gives them the money to control our political system. The same thing holds true with the media. So they actually, not brainwash, but they, in their way, change the whole complexion of what, where I'm going. I don't have to go any further.
I do. And I understand. But I appreciate the conversation more than anything else. It has been, it's been a dandy.
Hey, thank you very much for time on it, and it was great to talk to you, and I appreciate it. And have a good and enjoy your week.
I'm going to try, Jeff. I'm going to try.
Thanks. Bye, baby.
Take care. Jeff calling from New York State. It is the top of the hour. We'll take a little break. A bit of an announcement. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Jack. And thank you, Sal. As a result of those three, we have gone from needing to raise $375 to needing to raise $240. 24 people, $10. 48 people at $5. And hopefully that will happen. Because it ain't a want list, it's a need list. And so if you are on hold, please stay that way. A little break, and then we come back. A couple of lines open if you want to jump in and fill up the remainder of this prayer meeting Wednesday evening. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Down to Gonky Park, listening to the wind of change. August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change. That we could be so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeed. About 53 minutes or so left in the program for conversation, in which you are welcome to join. And, yeah, $240 is what we're trying to raise between now and show's end, so we can pull some more bills out of the hat and pay them and hopefully stay all lit up here. Thanks to Kate, Jack, and Sal. Thank you very much. All right, to the phones, straight away. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good, good. It finally cooled down just a little here in Colorado Springs, but it made it a little bit more tolerable. It's been unreal, the heat. And for those who say there's no global warming, I just point them to the fact that the other night, when I went to bed at 6,000 feet in altitude, it was still 75 degrees here at about 2 o'clock in the morning. So,
and that is a bit weird.
It used to be maybe 2 weeks out of the year during the summer we'd get some weather like that, but this was out of the ordinary for it to do that, and it's been out of the ordinary in the way it's doing it. In and of by itself, not necessarily weird, but the fact that we've had a couple cold snaps this month, but when we weren't having the cold snaps, we're having warm snaps in between. So it's excessive heat with a couple, two or three, three-day periods in between where it gets down into the 50s at night, but it'll still get back up into the 80s during the daytime, so it's not like, no, you're really enjoying the cold. It just allows you to cool down a little at night. But I'd call it out of the ordinary compared to the weather. I moved here 16 years ago, and it used to be you could count on a two-week period that it would be like that, the straight two-week period, and then it'd cool off. Now it's just these excessive cold snaps, and I've seen a couple days.
And season's out of whack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Best I can tell, it's about seasons are coming about a month early, is what I would say.
Or ending a month late, yeah, that kind of thing.
Depending on the part of the country you're in. You know, it's not the same weather on your side of the country. It may be the same hot weather, but it's...
Yeah, and we must also remember, Kevin, that, you know, weather and climate are separate things.
Right.
And in fact, the 12 seconds of Barack Obama's speech that MSNBC showed yesterday, he was saying exactly that. That weather events are made more extreme by climate change.
Yep.
And he talked about the fact that, you know, New York Harbor is a foot higher than it was 100 years ago.
Yep.
And one of the things that amazes me is that we still seem to have trouble talking about that because, and maybe it's because the right wing persistently succeeds in framing the issue.
Yep.
Is it anthropomorphic? Isn't it anthropomorphic? Does it really matter? Well, it matters to the extent that if it's not anthropomorphic, it's just, you know, these things happen on planets, and, oh, well, let's burn some more damn coal.
Right.
That matters. But when you get right down to it, Jeff Goodell's brilliant article in Rolling Stone, Goodbye Miami,
yep.
When the water is not in your basement but in your living room or the second story,
yep.
Whether it's anthropomorphic or not is of little consequence. I mean, we are looking within the next 100 years at massive migration issues that are gonna affect, you know, it's not gonna be the Sudan. It's gonna be Florida. And everybody loves Florida. Let's go to Florida. Let's go live in Florida. Florida's wonderful. Florida's warm. It's going to be an archipelago.
Yep.
And there is not going to be enough land for the people who are living on it. Now, tell me, Kevin, because I can't figure it out, how are you going to get people to voluntarily quit the state of Florida? Yeah, we're sorry. 75 years from now, your house is going to be underwater. Well, I don't have to worry about that. That'll be for the kids to worry about. And comparing that to the conversation with Jeff, where we talk about wanting it to be better for our kids, you know what? Economy, schmonomy, politics, schmolitics.
Yep.
If you live in Florida, your grandchildren are either going to leave or drown.
Yep.
A whole bunch of them. Okay, my boring classical analogy for the evening. The whole damn Gallic War started when pressure in Asia put people on the move, and people in Asia forced people in Eastern Europe to move, and people in Eastern Europe forced people in Central Europe to move, and people in Central Europe forced people in Western Europe to move.
Yep.
And it threatened to destabilize everything. It did, in fact, destabilize everything. Julius Caesar's war against the Gauls, the estimates are upwards of 10 million people he killed with no gunpowder.
Yep.
These things are profound events. And we've got one coming. And the crazy thing is, it's like a sort of macro Katrina. Katrina was churning along out in the Gulf of Mexico, and everybody knew where it was going.
Yep.
And we still had the disaster we had. And we know, we don't suspect, we know that the sea level will be untenably higher in 100 years in Florida.
Yep.
That also means probably that New Orleans is gone. It doesn't speak well for Baltimore. It doesn't say much for New York. It's going to be hard on Boston. Lather, rinse, repeat with the West Coast. We know it's happening. And the one thing we know better than anything else is that far from being just, you know, far from being the matter that 99% of the scientists are wrong and one lone scientist getting a payday every week from Americans for Prosperity or the American Oil Institute or what it turned out to be right. Far more than that, what we do know is that the sober-minded scientists who are saying this stuff, who are talking about one-foot sea level rises and things like that, they are deliberately underestimating lest they be called chicken littles.
Yep.
So it may not be 100 years. It may be 75. It may not be 75. It may be 50.
Yep.
And this country, we struggle to deal with freaking tornadoes. Okay?
Yep.
We struggle to deal with a damn derecho that blows through Appalachia. And we still have people standing on Capitol Hill saying, well, I ain't going to support no relief for them people unless we cut out people being to eat food.
Yep.
Now, what does that tell you about the future of this country? You know, by the way, upstream estuary cities, goodbye. Yeah, Washington, you're going to have a lovely time. Richmond, it's going to be great for you, too. Jacksonville, Florida, well, you're not even going to be an island.
Go up to Mississippi.
Mobile? Forget it.
Yeah.
Gulfport? Biloxi? Please.
And then a good example of what you were talking about, I call it the domino theory, and that same thing applies to what's happening now with the South and what you were talking about at the beginning of the program. Because there are going to be people that will move out of these states that can, that have the ability to, will get out of these states that they see turning hard right and so on. And it may be a small domino, but just like you were talking about with the Gallic Wars, one domino causes another domino to fall. And it's all these things together that are adding up that says, yeah, we're going to have a big problem. And I was listening to Jeff talk, and that was one of the things I was thinking, okay, I kind of agree. I ran into some conservative friends that that kind of say the same things that I hear liberals saying. The difference that I found is that the conservative people aren't willing, for lack of a better way of saying it, put their money where their mouth is in regards to solving the problems.
Not willing to put it where their ballot is either, Kevin.
Exactly.
And as a sort of counterpoint to Jeff's optimistic story of those reasonable conservatives, I got two things for you here.
Yep.
News Ninja Gene has known his fair share, too. He was in Oregon for a long time. He says, blue state conservatives, sometimes you have to cut your losses and do it without others. Their children will catch up when they don't have the noise around them. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And then there's this. He also said, in Portland, I knew many blue state conservatives. They sound almost reasonable until they get to putting a market value on nature in order to protect it. And he says, yeah, how? And then there's a note that I wanted to share last night, but wound up, it makes more sense to share it today. It is the other side of the coin from what Jeff was talking about. And it came in via my Facebook page from Andy, who is in Alaska.
Yep.
And he said, I had an optometry appointment last Friday, during which I was subjected to a 30-minute lecture from the optometrist on how the blacks and Mexicans, remember, we're in Alaska, have figured out how to vote for Democrats and game the welfare system in order to outbreed the, and he put quotation marks around it, so this means the doc said it, white race.
Yep.
And eliminate, quote-unquote, us from the gene pool. This sort of thinking is definitely not a 1950s and 1960s issue. And I'm sure, Andy says, I could easily guess his opinion on the VRA. This is a different Andy.
Yep.
The most disturbing thing for me, Voting Rights Act, that's right, VRA. The most disturbing thing for me, and this is, I really think he gets to the heart of the matter here. The most disturbing thing for me was the fact that he felt completely comfortable sharing this, as if it were some sort of obvious matter of fact with a complete stranger during a medical exam. And he went on to follow up and note that he was sent to this guy by the VA.
Yep.
Now, that's more the conservative that I'm familiar with. You'll be minding your own business, and they'll just come up and start at you. And they're shocked if you don't sit there and nod your head like a bobblehead bulldog in the back of a 57 Chevy.
Yep.
And you know, those are the people who won't get on the bus, and if you don't drive away in the bus, we'll go ahead and steal and we'll steal the hubcaps and the tires and put it on blocks.
Yep. Yep, that's sad to say, but
and I mean, Andy, I read that and I went, wow, because I've had that experience more times than I can count. But, I mean, they just come up, and you've probably had it too, Kevin. They come up to you, let me tell you about my Jesus.
Yep.
Or that, you know, I walk, there's a little convenience store that I go to sometimes after the show is over just to sort of get out and move around a little bit, and I'll go in there and get a bag of potato chips or something. And I'll walk in there, and they'll be telling Obama N-word jokes, and they get all pissy when I look at them and say, well, how enlightened of you.
Yep.
As if somehow I'm in the wrong for pointing out that what they're doing is really pretty nasty. They don't just want the right to be nasty among themselves. They want the right to be nasty to everybody. And that's why they have the poop hemorrhages that they have over things like marriage equality. I mean, I still haven't gotten to the list of insane right-wing reactions to the DOMA ruling today and the Prop 8 ruling. My God in heaven. Let's see. Todd Starnes, a Fox News contributor, tweeted, Supreme Court overrules God. Won't be long before they outlaw the Bible as hate speech. How long before federal agents haul pastors out of the pulpit?
Yep.
And then there's, you know, you can always count on Brian Fisher, the guy who hates grizzly bears for Jesus. From down in from the American Family Association hate group down in Mississippi. He said, the DOMA ruling has now made the normalization of polygamy, pedophilia, incest, and bestiality inevitable. Matter of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul, hero of some so-called progressives, Rand Paul made a special point of going on Glenn Beck's program today to declare that he was afraid that people would be trying to marry animals now. Jesus, really?
And that is a mark of the conservative. They will go immediately to the extreme on just almost any issue like that. I find it fascinating that when you sit down and think about it logically, what does it matter what the person in the house next to you is doing with their sex life? It matters not. It matters not if they're married. It matters not if they're straight, gay, bisexual, trisexual, whatever. It doesn't concern you. It doesn't affect you. But these people immediately go to the, oh, God, we're going to allow bestiality now.
And see, I personally think that's because they have an urge in that direction.
Right. Yeah. It is very possible.
They go where their own vile minds take them, Kevin.
Right. It's like the girl on the football team, the 12-year-old that was kicked off the school football team because the boys
were going to have impure thoughts, which means that the principal's
right.
Probably already having them.
Well, that's the case. I bet you if you ask those 12-year-old boys, it wasn't them that were having the impure thoughts. It was the principal, you know. I mean, come on. Let's think about it. You're wearing pads, and you're in football gear. You know, how much can you actually, quote-unquote, get away with, for lack of a better way of saying it? You know, sex on a football field, you're not thinking about it. It's not something that even a teenager is going to be thinking about. And even if
I'll go out on a limb with this, Kevin. I have no objections to plural marriages, line marriages. You know, the guy who says, I've got two wives and it's mighty bigamy, or the woman who says, I've got two husbands and it's mighty bigamy. That's an old joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know why I have no objection? And see, this would be proof positive to the Brian Fishers and Rand Pauls of the world that it's a coming. I have no objection to it because it's none of my business.
That's right.
And in point of fact, yeah, they've already gone there. I think it was Rand Paul and the Beckerhead who declared, maybe it was somebody else, that now, because of these here Supreme Court rulings, we're going to have all kinds of Sharia Muslims coming to America so they can have four wives.
Which is a total swerve, because it's you that's wanting to impose Sharia law on us. It's just called Christian. It's not the Muslims that are wanting to come install Sharia law on us. It's you wanting to install your Judeo-Christian law on us.
Which is actually kind of unfair to the Judeo half of that equation, because
right.
I don't see just a whole bunch of Jews wandering around saying that they want us to all live, you know, under the Torah.
No.
And its associated legal structures.
Well, it's pretty understood from the beginning of Judaism that the Torah was for the Jews, not for other religions.
And what's really hilarious out of that is that these structures already exist in this country. Texas Betsy could tell you far better. Religious law concerns religious life, and civil law concerns civil life.
Yep.
By the same token, you are empowered to get a divorce from your spouse in this country, regardless of religion or creed or anything else, and now sexuality, because with marriage equality comes divorce equality.
Yep.
But in the Catholic Church, you may have a divorce, but you're going to have to go and you're going to have to write a check to the diocese if you want it annulled, because that's the only way you can get out of a marriage in the Catholic Church. So, looky there. Well, that's just, you know what? Oddly enough, that's like Sharia law. But, well, I didn't hear Rand Paul or any of the other freakazoids out there complaining that, well, at least, and I don't know, maybe it's the good part. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Well, now Roman Catholic priests will feel free to... Oh, wait, they already are abusing any child they want to. Oh, well, never mind.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we all this stuff they're talking about is happening before anything had to do with the gay marriage. It's happening in the church. So what are you complaining about? There was a toast out here who always used to say he had been married and divorced 3 or 4 times, and he used to say, let the gays get married. Let them experience the joys of divorce. You know, and that's kind of the truth of it. You know, if you want to get married, more power to you. That's up to you. It's not for me to control your sex life, and I really don't care. I'm not going to go
right.
up to someone.
You have no interest in.
Right.
I mean, if you...
Yeah.
And putting aside your sight-related issues for a moment, if you wanted to see two people that weren't you and somebody else having sex, that's what porn's for.
Right.
Now, the porn discussion is a separate issue. I'm not bringing it up as an approval. But that's what porn's for. You don't have to sit there wondering what's going on next door.
No.
Unless, of course, you are so obsessed with someone else's life, unless you are so obsessed with trying to control that life that you can't get their sexuality out of your head. And in that case, you're sick and you have, odds are, been poisoned not by some industrial chemical, but by, oh, look, religion.
Yep. Yep.
Because, again, and I want to reinforce this, there is not a single rational argument against marriage equality or against abortion that is not steeped in someone's desire to impose their religious world upon your existence.
Right. Yep.
I mean, they try to gin it up. Women's what has abortions, they get lumps in their breastises.
Yep.
Please.
Yeah, they came up with that one when other arguments weren't working. Interesting you mentioned that, though, because I followed the VRA thing last night. Got most of my news from Twitter. And it was interesting because had it not been for the Internet, the Republicans may well have gotten away with declaring that vote legal. But because there was Internet coverage of that vote, people took pictures of the timestamp showing that the vote was taken after midnight.
Yeah, but by the same token, Kevin, they also did it because they knew that Rick Perry would call another special session today.
Yep.
And that they would ram this thing. This fight is far from over. Like I said, this is a gauntlet that's been thrown down. Can the women of Texas and their decent human being allies muster this kind of resistance over a much more extended period of time?
Right, exactly. It's who can outlast. That's what it's become politically now, is almost a who can outlast the other mentality.
It's our money versus your passion.
Willpower. Yep. Yep.
Right. Hey, Kevin, I got to roll. I want to make sure we get in everybody who's on hold, but it's awful good to hear from you.
Okay, Bob, you have a good one, and money is 10 knots. I'll just say that I'm planning on sending probably Thursday $10, and that is somewhat hard for me to do, folks, but if you enjoy this show, if you want to see it, please find a way to do it.
Well, then thank you, Kevin. We are at 2:30 now, and it matters more than you know. There's no such thing as a small contribution, and there is no contribution that comes in that is not done with some sacrifice and every one of us associated with this years-long project knows that. So thank you very kindly.
I would just say it's the last few months have been a challenge for me because there was a mistake made on my check, Social Security, and that, like the domino effect, has trickled down. But, you know, I eat $10 of junk food a month. You know what I'm saying? Probably more than that. So if I can, I use that example because I use it when we vote. It's a hassle for me to get out and vote. And I've been on local TV stations saying, folks, I'm blind, mobility is an issue, transportation is an issue, but if I can make it on the polls on Tuesday to vote, you can make it to the polls. And, you know, so I'll just throw that out there. So, anyway, I'll let you go, and best wishes to all the Horn family tonight.
Thank you very kindly, Kevin. You have a good night.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. We go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Mr. Bob.
Well, hey, Tracy.
Well, I'm having a hell of a day today. I'm dropping off people in West Hollywood, and people are celebrating. I had a hell of a conversation about gay marriage with a couple from Australia. And considering that I was dropping them off in West Hollywood, they're like, I said, by the way, just letting you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on in West Hollywood, and I hope you don't mind being around a lot of gay folks.
They were...
I mean, they've already... There's going to be a lot... They've already closed off the streets in West Hollywood.
Wow.
They've already closed off the streets. I am pissed because I'm stuck in traffic working because I can't be out celebrating. Because trust and believe, if I didn't have to, you know, pay for that trip I just came back from, I'd be in West Hollywood just giggling. And just people are walking up and down the streets, Bob, smiling. I mean, I've actually seen people crying. Tears of joy. You know, walking hand in hand with each other. Just, you know, there's signs, people holding up signs saying, just married. And stuff like that. How amazing is that? How incredible!
It's got to be—it's got to be pretty beautiful to behold.
Bob, it, I'm telling you, you know, I am just, you know, even though, you know, not nothing. Marriage has never been one of my things. I don't care to be married or anything like that. But see now, you know, my girl's been asking me to marry her, and I keep saying, "Well, honey, you know, since we can't get federal recognition, I can't marry you. And since we can't get married in California, I can't marry you now. I have no argument."
Except for maybe, I mean, yeah, just because one can does not mean one must.
Oh, no. I am going to marry her. I love her so much. I just like to mess with her. It just makes her nuts. You know I'm a troublemaker, Bob.
Well, I was watching this tweet that came in a little bit ago, Tracy. Australian customers loving your shows.
Yes.
So they were anti-gay? What? I mean,
No, they do. I was asking them about the crime because I was listening to the Brad blog, you know, so I had the Green News Report, and then I switched over to you. And so they were listening to the shows about climate change, and we got on the conversation about gay marriage and climate change in Australia and what's the climate there. And they were, and I said, I was asking them about carbon. They were telling me about the
carbon tax.
And they were saying that there's more than likely, there's a couple of territories like Tasmania and whatnot that will probably vote for gay marriage because of what's happening here.
Wow.
In the United States. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting. You mentioned having Australians in your car, which sounds, I don't mean it sounds as strange as I made it sound. But I had a note in from Robert in Sydney overnight, and he said, unlike the USA, we don't vote for the leader of the country. We have a new prime minister here in Australia. The prime minister is elected by members of the cabinet, so technically we could have a new one every day. But he said at 7 p.m. last night, there was a ballot for leadership of the Labor Party, and Kevin Rudd won, so he's prime minister again, and Julia Gillard is out. Robert said, I find this all very tiring. It's little to do with actual running of the country and more to do with internal politics and egos of the Labor Party. When Julia was made prime minister, it was because the party thought she was a better choice at the time. Now they think the better choice is Kevin. And all it really comes down to is this, which leader is more likely to lead us to an electoral victory in September, not necessarily who's the best leader for the country at this time. I'm sure the Liberal Party will do their best, and the Liberal Party is actually the Conservatives in Australia. We have to understand that.
Right.
They're the right-wingers. The Liberal Party will do their best to use this to make the Labor Party look like they're unsuited to run the country as they fight amongst themselves. Robert says, I shall be interested to see which way the Australian people lean when we all go to the polls in September or earlier if they call a special election. And, you know, I really want to see that carbon tax survive. But that will be, unless I'm mistaken, the platform plank of the Liberal Party, that they're going to repeal that, you know, communist, socialist, baby-eating carbon tax.
And that's what my customers were saying. Hello, ladies. I figure we're going to West Hollywood.
Yes.
Just picked up a couple of customers. Yes. I'm heading back.
Tell them this is not cash cab, okay? Because there ain't no money here.
No, they're excited. No, but I was saying about the carbon tax, and from what my customers were saying, you guys, we're on a radio talk show right now, by the way.
Oh.
That they're fearful that they're going to repeal that. They were very much for climate, you know, the carbon tax and gay marriage. But they're very, 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 very fearful that that tax is going to be repealed and that the ugliness is going to come back. So I know you got a whole bunch of other people to talk to, Bob, but like I said, my customers love you guys, love the show.
Well, tell them to tune in on their own. They're welcome to join the party.
And I said, as soon as I pay back all the money that I spent for my, you know, my extended vacation.
Tillamook ice cream, I am told, is not cheap.
No, it is not. It is not. But, hey, honey, I had a great time. I love you. Love the Horner family. And God bless America. Every so often, this country does what's supposed to be done.
Yep. It does. Or tries to.
Or tries to, anyway.
But
anyway,
remember, please, nothing is ever settled. Nothing is ever done. Every right must be jealously protected, Tracy, because there are people who want to take them away.
Who wants those assholes that are called? Never mind. I'm not going to go.
We learned yesterday that even the right of people to vote, is not settled or done in this country.
It's almost how I was feeling in 2008, how Obama won and gay marriage lost, where gay marriage won in 2013 and voting rights lost. I mean, can't we have two things at once?
That walk and chew bubble gum thing is a real problem. I encourage you, Tracy, check out the front end of the program. My filibobster for the first hour. You might find it interesting.
I shall. So anyway, happy at the end of Ding Dong. Doma is dead. The Wicked Witch is dead. And God bless. Thank you, Horn family, for everything, the listening, the supporting Bob. Because it's because of people in our family, in our group of friends, that a lot of these things, getting the word out and letting the people know it's not about God, it's about civil rights and the right for all to be counted as one person, one nation. That's all I got to say. Peace out.
Hear, hear, Tracy. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. I hope they have fun in West Hollywood tonight. I sure do. And thanks, Sylvia. Thank you very much for helping out this evening. We're now at 220 to make our fundraising goal for the evening, and a lot of bills to pay. Thanks very kindly, Sylvia, for joining in. Will is patiently waiting on the Skype line. Hey, Will.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob. It's been a week from the Supreme Court that makes me recall a line from Dickens. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. I'm very happy that there has been progress on marriage equality, but I know full well it's not over, even though now one third of our population, 100 million people in 13 states, will live in states where you can marry a member of the same gender or a different gender as it suits you. However, I think that your analysis earlier at the top of the show was spot on, namely that divide and conquer, a strategy older than the pyramids, is something that John Roberts would like to see the Republicans use. So I think your call for let us marry, let us vote is important. It's always been my opinion. My rights are only safe if your rights are safe. And I think we have to realize anything we want, we have to be in it for the long haul, because those who would wish to limit our freedoms are in it for the long haul as well. No ifs, ands, or buts there.
Hear, hear. I want to be, and I do not want to take away from anybody's joy this evening.
No, we should celebrate when we can.
Damn, I see a long road. I see a mighty long road. And I think everybody has to walk it. You know, there's not going to be any sedan chairs or chariots or flying carpets.
Well, I've used this story before on the horn, the story about the old man who's planting a tree and is asked, why are you planting a tree when you won't live long enough to see fruit from it? And he said, it's because I am planting not just for myself, but others. And we have to be in for the long haul. Jane Addams and others in the early progressive movement in the late 1800s, early 1900s knew it would be a long haul, and many of their dreams did not bear fruit until the New Deal. Now we have a Republican Party that wishes the New Deal had never happened, holds up Herbert Hoover and Calvin Coolidge and William McKinley as role models, and have shown yet again and again their incompetence in foreign policy and domestic governance, so much so that if we were a somewhat more logical species, we would no more allow ourselves to be governed by Republicans than we would allow ourselves to be governed by house cats. Except that the house cats might be a bit cleaner. So.
I share a higher opinion of house cats too. So.
Yes, but one thing we have to remember is our hard-won rights always have to be defended. As John F. Kennedy said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And I think it applies to more than just worrying about foreign enemies. It applies to worrying about those who would try to take us to an imaginary past that never existed, save perhaps as a script for a TV show. We have to be bold. We have to move forward. We have to stay together. The glory of the conservative movement is that they have brought different factions together and kept them more or less united, although we are seeing a unraveling of that. Progressives have not quite realized we need a progressive movement to counter the conservative movement. So I do not stand just only for religious liberty, marriage equality. I stand for a number of causes which I label under the banner progressive. And in your struggles, whether they be to end mountaintop removal or fracking or ensure marriage equality or ensure better conditions for your communities, I am your ally because, yes, I am my brother's keeper. That, I had one rabbi said, was the whole point of any religious or philosophical teaching, to remember that we are a community. And speaking of community, do not forget the horn tonight. Every little bit counts. There's a story involving the Buddha where people were bringing in various objects to bless, and a poor beggar boy wanted to a blessing and scooped up dirt. And the Buddha proclaimed, your offering, the most humble, is perhaps the most blessed because you seek to bless the land itself. And so the Buddhist legend goes, child eventually was reborn many lifetimes later as the King Ashoka, a person as famous in India as King Arthur is in the British Isles. So every little bit helps, and every action you can take, whether it's doing what a good friend of ours, Texas Betsy, did in being at the Capitol in Austin, where I believe the Republican legislators are more afraid of demographic change than they would be of the Captain Trips virus from Stephen King's The Stand. We must remember, we are one. And that is perhaps the essential.
And that's the teaching that has to go out. Because as noted, I think some of this is about dividing. Making sure that no alliance, you know, because if you had the gay community and the community of color both working hammer and tongs on issues at the same time, there's a real likelihood that they would link up.
Yes, and throw in.
And when progressive people really, really take to heart that that notion that a harm to one is a harm to all, they're almost unstoppable.
Yes, and I mean, consider, we saw the same mindset several times in U.S. history, and we had changes in labor laws, changes in civil rights, the abolition of slavery internationally. We saw regimes which some people thought would persist for decades if we did destroy ourselves in nuclear fire, and because people demanded change. Berlin Wall fell not due to an atom bomb blast, but because people were fed up with a corrupt system and decided, yes, we are going to demand change. And I think that one thing that the high and mighty in this country and elsewhere fear is the day the people wake up and realize we are strong. Let us realize our own strength and use it not to hold others down, but to lift others up. Because if we lift others up and stand together, we can perhaps build a world that is worthy of our best aspirations, rather than play around in the rubble of a great civilization trying to explain to our grandchildren why there used to be places like Miami and New Orleans and Havana, Cuba, but they are no more. Oh, and by the way, our ecosystem is very badly off, so good luck, kid. We can do better than that. We should. And a small step tonight is make your voice heard on issues you care about, work with others on issues they care about, and support good outlets like The Horn where we can have these conversations, because you will not hear this on many radio stations in the country.
Any,
not the long form. You can get good short form conversations,
yeah,
but long form, not really.
Well, long form and unencumbered by exhortations to buy gold now.
Yes, or buy
Those vacuum cleaners that pick up Swedish bowling balls.
Yes, yes. Although I don't think any of them can pick up Rush Limbaugh's ego. Possibly a black hole could, but there might be one black hole attracting.
Well, even black holes have some self-respect, Will.
Yes, yes. Yes, we might have to invent a whole other sort of hole for Limbaugh to fall down to.
Sooner the better.
Yep.
Yeah. By the way, you might get a kick out of this, since you mentioned Flush Limbaugh. He declared today, that no one, he said all the gay issues are behind us now. He declared Nobody in this country has ever been denied the right to get married. And I guess he's just thinking about the fact that he's never been denied the right to get married. Because he cherishes the institution of marriage so much, he's done it several times.
Yes, and apparently he has never heard of Loving v. Virginia, which was ruled on in our lifetime. And if you think about it, Bob, for those of us of a certain age, we were born in an era where there were lynchings and bans on racial interracial marriage and a horrific treatment of people standing up for their beliefs, and we've made some progress. We always have someone wish to drag us back, but we have the courage to move ourselves forward. So let us say, use a phrase a friend of mine is using, the people united
will never be defeated
and should never be divided, because yes, I am my brother's keeper, and so is everyone here at the Horn. You are your brother's and sister's keeper, because we have ourselves. We don't have multi-million-dollar endorsements keeping Bob on the air, and it's going to take a lot of hard work, but I think we'll get there.
I think we can, and I appreciate your optimism, because I have to struggle to maintain my own.
Well,
I see a long, hard struggle. You know, even Beth wrote in from Texas to let me know that Wendy Davis, who led that heroic filibuster last night, has acknowledged that in this special session that Rick Perry has called at vast expense to the people of the state of Texas for issues that barely deserve even consideration, and some that don't deserve it outright. Wendy Davis has said, they may roll over us. They probably will, but they underestimate the consequences of doing so. Obviously, we're still going to fight with every fiber that we have.
Yes, and one thing that we can realize is we have more power than we realize, and if we stand together, as Ben Franklin urged the founding fathers to do, we can do the impossible. For them, it was defeating the world's greatest power and having 13 colonies become a nation, imperfect as though its conception was, as perfect as our march towards progress. But we have made progress, and we can continue. And I'd like to have the Horn continue. Jokingly, if anyone wins the Powerball this weekend, Bob could definitely use a source of funding. And also, there's a lot of many causes that could use our help. Even if you don't have money, make your voice heard. Silence should not be an option in this day and age, because, as I recall someone saying about the Holocaust, silence never helped the victim, only the oppressor.
Indeed. Thank you, Will. And I thank you for all the goodwill that you bring to these conversations.
You're welcome. Have a good night, and let's hope for a good night for the Horn.
Thank you, Will. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Will calling from Chicago. And that will pretty much do it for tonight's edition of the Horn. By the way, just a follow-up, Robert in Australia writing in, Bob, if the Liberal Party win the next election, remember, those are the right-wingers, they will repeal the carbon tax because their backers don't like it, and most average Aussies who don't like it, I've found, don't understand what it actually is. Oh, look, they've got the same ignorance problem we have. I don't believe in that climate change. Do you know what it is? Not really. Just don't like it. And I won't subject you to my Aussie accent version of the same thing. Robert continues, they will take the national broadband network and change it from fiber to your house, fiber to your modem speeds of 100 megabytes per second, and change it to fiber to the node, i.e. a fiber optic cable runs to the end of your street and then it plugs into the ancient phone lines. Why do this? Because it saves a few bucks now. Every expert in the field has said it's a stupid idea, but they'll do it anyway. Oh, look, conservatives! And a few pictures from the BBC, Doco Earth Underwater, which looks at the effects of sea level rise over the next 100 to 300 years. Yeah, that's creepy. The first layer of arches of the Eiffel Tower underwater. Whoa. And a wall around New York. That's okay. We're spending big bucks building a wall in the middle of a desert. But we're not going to do the immigration thing tonight. There's just no time. Thanks, everybody. We're making progress. We're getting there. Thank you, Jan and Jerry. We are now down to $200 that we need to raise by about showtime tomorrow night. And hopefully that will happen. Because there's 150 to raise tomorrow night, and if we don't, then it'll be 350. There's not a lot of sunlight comes into the hole when we get ourselves in it. But thanks, everybody. You're making it possible. And we'll hang on as hard as we can down to the last toenail. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks to you, first and foremost, who, with your contributions of money, but of your ideas, your conversation, and even if you're not calling in, the precious, finite time you spend, thank you. It would not be worth doing without all of those things. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Quick admission, I screwed up. For some reason or another, I didn't get a recording of Dr. Bill this afternoon, so that's why there won't be an archive, and we've got some audio issues to work out, too. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and acact.org. Go there and learn how you can help be an end to the agony of Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.